Tuesday, June the 28th, began with a sense of elation and ended on a solemn note, not unmixed with fear. It was a restless night. We were awake at 4 and at 6 and at 8, and then I went to sleep and slept until 10. I had an appointment at 11 with Mr. Charles Palmer of Warm Springs, Georgia, and Madame Shumatov to show me her completed sketch of the portrait of FDR. We went into the Lincoln Room to set it up on an easel, looked for the just right light, and then with an air of infinite excitement in all of us, Madame Shumatov lifted off the covering, and there it was, the most wonderful face of FDR, a young, strong, magnetic leader. Years away and millions of worries away from the dying president she painted at Warm Springs. For once, I looked at a work of art and loved it at first sight. No need to call in John Walker or Dylan Ripley to bolster my opinion or to combat it. Mr. Palmer, as proud as he could be because it's all his idea, said, "This is the eye of the compassionate father," pointing at one side of his old boss's face. "And this eye is saying, you can't deal me a card under the table." And I thought it was true. This is a delightful dichotomy of the man. Coffee. Coffee was brought in, and nobody was interested. Just then, Lyndon passed out in the hall, and I rushed out and asked him to come in a moment. He met them. He looked at it. He liked it, too. I told him what I hoped for it, that it would hang either in his office or in the cabinet room. This was my moment of elation. And then, just as they were about to leave, Nash Castro and Mary Lasker arrived. I brought Mary in and introduced her. We were quite familiar with her name and with all she'd done, and she liked it, too. Only the face was done. With promises to have the finished product in the next few months, I said goodbye, and Mary and Nash and I left in a small car to visit the places that had won awards. Francis Scott Key School and Triangles, and down South Capitol Street to Southwest Washington, and past the Texaco Station. My particular aim was to see several of the projects that were to receive awards this afternoon, so hopefully I could feel and act intelligent about them. We were back at the White House by 1:30, and I sent lunch in to Mary on a tray in the Queen's room while I got ready for my 2 o'clock meeting with the Beautification Committee. It was the last meeting of the summer before Operation Wedding started for me, and for others, disbursement for all their vacation plans. Stuart Udall presided. The main business of the day was Nat Owings showing us Model for the Mall. Bernie Booten and Stephen Currier, Mrs. Corner of the Garden Clubs were there. Katie Lockheim and Admiral Phillips, the first time I'd seen him since his wife died. Lawrence Rockefeller, Polly Shackleton, who's worked faithfully on neighborhood projects. Charlie Horsky and Walter DeBriner, who were almost always faithfully present. Bill Walton was out of the country. Brooke Astor in Europe, I think. It was a brief, outspoken meeting. Approval in general. An outcry about too many trees spaced too close. On my part, I kept on insisting there were already a great many trees between the Smithsonian and the Capitol. And one of my chief feelings is that the cherry trees planted around the Washington Monument grounds must not march row on row like soldiers, but be casually, gracefully spaced like a tossed bouquet. It was a short meeting, and then we all went down to the awards ceremony at 2:45 in the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden. There, some 200 representatives of the 46 winning projects had already assembled under a tent, keep off the heat. I made a brief speech of welcome, a summary of the wonderful things that had happened in Washington this spring. Magnolia Solangianas lead from the Capitol to the Anacostia River, Pershing Square a blaze of glory, and all the little triangles that have burst into bloom. But the business of the day was to recognize what residents of the district have been doing, to thank them and cheer them on, and hopefully to make them feel like doing more next year. I introduced Katie Lockheim, who is chairman of the awards committee, and then she presented the winners of the 5 handsome bronze plaques that had been designed by Ivan Chermenyev and that went to Walker Jones School and Francis Scott Key School, my first old friend, Jefferson Junior High School, delightfully enough, to the 2nd Precinct Police Station, where Captain Owen Davis, Negro, has practically made a career out of turning a barren police station into a pretty well-landscaped place where young folks will want to congregate, and to the Texaco Service Station on South Capitol, for design and landscaping, and very especially for reducing a 65-foot-high Mexico sign that had towered above the Capitol on one of the main entrances to the city to a modest 28 feet. When you get that kind of cooperation from private enterprise, you think you're making some headway. Jimmy Pitkin was there to receive it, and I hope he felt the warmth of my smile and handshake. The awards were made in three categories: public, neighborhood, and commercial. By jury, under the chairmanship of Nicholas Satterlee, they toured the city inspecting about 100 entries. In some instances, I was less than ecstatic about the caliber of the efforts put forth. Hopefully, this will only spur them on. And there were certificates, about 40 of them, for other schools and playground projects, recreation centers, and garden clubs. The whole emphasis was on citizen participation. After the presentations, I invited the guests to the South Lawn for punch and cookies under the striped tents. I'd ask all the committee members to look for the award winners and congratulate them and give them that sort of cheering on that may produce more results next year. It was a full 2 hours of the work that has become my most cherished project in this last 18 months. I was thinking of what Stuart Udall had said. Most of the items shown in the plan for the mall would either be in place or under construction in the next 5 years, and I wondered how much of it I would be here to see. Far back on visits. So, as Daddy used to say, we've got the crop laid by for this year. And on to other things. Next on the program was Esther Peterson's group, President's Commission on the Status of Women. The rain which had held off for us coming, so we had it in the East Room. Greetings by Lyndon. Thanks to the outgoing president. Welcome to the new one. And then a receiving line in the blue room, a few minutes of mixing, and upstairs. And the next business of the day was to see with Liz and Tom Atkins and Simone films about Lucy, about our Rockefeller LBJ Ranch trip. It was a sort of conference to try to cue Tom Atkins in on what we hoped to accomplish in the movies of the wedding. The dress rehearsals for this wedding, the preparations. At 8 o'clock, Marvin Watson brought Senator Dick Russell over. An air of comfort and solace always accompanies him when he comes into our presence. No matter how much we differ, and we do, I have a firm faith in his rare ability as a public servant, though perhaps of a philosophy that is now in its twilight, and as an earnest friend of Lyndon. It was a quiet dinner, just the three of us. One of the nicest things is that Lyndon comes home early for a guest like Dick. We were 2 hours discussing the military future of the country, the Senate and its problems and personalities and changes. The air was alive with a sense of change, of a big decision having been reached. It had been gestating for days, weeks, espoused, attacked, examined, explored from every angle, in the long meetings with Rusk and Ball and Rostow and the military men. I asked no questions, but I felt the decision had been reached to bomb the fuel depots. When Senator Russell left early, as he must these days to protect his health, Lyndon called Lucy and said, "I want to go to church. Any of your Catholic churches open?" Lucy very quickly said, "Monks lived in that church. You could get Pat to call one of them. We could go there." It was a quick call, and less than 30 minutes later, we were on our way, Lyndon and Lucy and I, to a dark, silent church in the southwest, deserted except for us. We were let in by a monk in a long, belted robe. Lucy told me he was a brother, not a father. We went quietly to a pew and knelt, and each with his own thoughts, took his troubles to the Lord. I was sitting quietly in my seat a long time before Lyndon, and then we filed out, the brother looking as though this happened to him any day of the week, quietly and courteously showing us to the door. Nobody at all knew it, and we were back at the White House for a relatively early attack on the night reading at a little past 11.